A year ago this week, the UN declared Syria to be in a state of civil war. Government restrictions on media have limited coverage of the conflict that has killed an estimated 30,000 people so far. Last week, the British government officially recognized an opposition coalition as the Syrian people's sole legitimate representative. There's speculation on whether the U.S. will follow suit or if the Obama administration will otherwise support a rebellion that few Americans understand. Vice, a monthly magazine popular with the under 30 crowd for its provocative imagery and gritty topics, devoted its November issue to photographs and articles about the resistance, the government supporters, political history, literature, and fallout of the Syrian conflict. Vice's senior editor Aaron Lake Smith is on the line to tell us more about the issue, which is free, by the way. Aaron, great to have you back with us.
Thanks for having me back on, Virginia.
Vice is known for pushing boundaries, certainly, but the singular focus of this Syria issue is a departure. So what was behind that decision?
Well, Vice, we ran a Iraq issue back in 2007, and we were obviously watching we were watching the presidential elections and thinking about kind of how to theme our November issue. And it just seemed like Syria was kind of the obvious choice as far as, you know, it was basically of all the Arab Spring revolts, this is kind of the major one to look at because Syria is the linchpin of the Middle East. I mean, what happens in Syria now is going to determine the fate of all the adjacent countries of Israel, of Lebanon, Iraq, Kurdistan. And so we were watching the revolt. We were watching kind of it stagnate and turn into a civil war and become extremely violent and prolonged. And we were interested in the issues at play. Obviously, we wanted to get some reporters in there, have them do some on-the-ground work and report back to us what is actually happening. People, you know, there's a couple of magazines that have been able to get reporters in, but, you know, for a while there, coverage was pretty sparse.
Well, it is a pretty bold move. Now, this is Vice is available for free at American Apparel shops and other, let's face it, we'll call them hipster hangouts. Now, I just read that the average age of Vice Media employee is 26 years old. Are you aiming to make Syria interesting to 20-somethings here? Is that what's behind this?
Well, I think of all, you know, of course the Arab Spring is of interest to young people because it's being led by young people in those countries. And, you know, of all the revolts, this one in Syria, I mean, it was sparked by teenagers who, you know, last year they were in Daraa and they ended up spray painting down with Assad on their school, ended up getting their fingernails pulled out and tortured. And that was kind of the first indignity that led to this prolonged revolt. A lot of the fighters, you know, both on the army side and the FSA side are young men and women. People are suffering, are the young. So we think that, you know, this being a revolution led by the young, that young people over the world who are reading our magazine would be interested in what happens to them and kind of what they're doing in their countries and how they're kind of expressing themselves politically.
I read throughout these articles, too, that oftentimes reporters, at least one photographer, are frustrated that news about Syria isn't getting out. Certainly many, many of the Syrians interviewed to say people just don't care. You know, why don't you care? We're suffering here. So how were you trying to tell this story differently from other news reports?
Well, we wanted to get reporters in there on the ground and experience, you know, try to get us some scenes, try to show us what's actually happening. I mean, you have lots of magazines out there that are telling us the kind of mechanics, the complicated mechanics at play within the Syrian opposition and with the government and with the Kurdish state. And, you know, we wanted to actually see, you know, through the reporter's eyes what's happening, see through the photojournalist eyes. And, we that's kind of what we do is experiential journalism. We have people actually go in and do you know, embed among the rebels or hang out, go to a protest among Assad supporters in France and in Paris. And so that's kind of, we felt like that would best show what's actually going on rather than kind of sitting here in the U.S. and talking without actually being there firsthand.
Well, we have one of those intrepid reporters, I must say, on the line with us, Anna Therese Day. She's an independent producer and reporter for Vice magazine. She was quite literally smuggled into the country to embed herself with the FSA. That's the lead opposition group. Now, she's on the line with us from Ramallah in the Palestinian-controlled West Bank. So we have a spotty line, but I really want to thank you, Anna, for being with us.
Thank you for having me today.
So you wrote about gun running with the Free Syrian Army. I mean, how did you gain access, first of all?
Well, generally a report on civil society stories, and actually the fact that I was able to gain access to the gunrunners really speaks to the desperation of the situation in Syria. The folks that I met first were low-level arms traffickers who were normal citizens before the revolution, and they were people who were car salesmen. I met a teacher, a government engineer, and all have been forced into these marginal and dangerous industries as a result of necessity. From the very, very violent crackdown that is now consuming Syria.
Now, this you met them mostly in Kilis, is that how I pronounce it, in Turkey?
Yes.
Okay. Tell us about crossing the border from Kilis, and with whom and where you landed.
Yes. Well, I spent about a month and a half with many of these contacts, and whenever you're inside Syria, there is no safe place currently. In the, quote, liberated areas of northern Syria, the areas that don't have government presence still have barrel bombs, which are industrial barrels of TNT and shrapnel that are dropped from government airplanes. In the city of Aleppo, that still has some government presence, there are snipers everywhere. So there is no safe place, so you end up becoming much closer with your contacts than you would in any normal scenario. So I went in with two colonels in the FSA and a gunrunner who I'd been working with for about a month and a half, and I was blindfolded, put in a car in Kilis, Turkey. Then we entered illegally into Syria. This isn't as uncommon as one would think. Actually, all of the defected generals in the Syrian government have to enter and exit Turkey illegally because they were never granted passports under the Assad regime. So when we entered Syria, we ended up near the Azov border, which is the normal border crossing, but had entered illegally.
That's Anna Turiste. She's a journalist who wrote about gun running with the Free Syrian Army for Vice's Syria issue. Aaron Lake Smith, senior editor at Vice, is also with us. But I'd love to continue with you, Anna, while we have you on the line. You know, you met several different people, as you mentioned, a colonel in the FSA, some underlings, but many of them had very similar stories about how they came to fight. Maybe you can give us a typical story about the FSA members. Founded less than a year ago, where are they getting arms and where are they getting the people?
What I found most interesting is that many of these people that I met were not anti-government originally, even about maybe 2 years ago they weren't, before the uprising. It wasn't until they were, of course, critical when the government started cracking down on Syrians in the south, but most of them wanted to mind their own business, quite frankly. When the government moved in on Aleppo and the northern towns, people remained loyal to the government in many scenarios, and it wasn't until there was just mass violence against civilians who were even trying to stay out of it that people felt their only option was armed resistance. They see it as self-defense. So that is what I found to be most common among many of the FSA fighters with whom I met. Now they're quite radicalized as a result of feeling targeted for the past however many months. Currently, when I was there was a limbo period. Everyone was waiting for the American election because there's the perception that the American government is the only Western ally with their foot on the brakes in arming the FSA. Mm-hmm. Since the election, the United States hasn't moved on that yet. However, there are European countries who have promised the FSA weapons, as well as the Gulf countries that are American allies. So right now, there hasn't been movement on that yet, other than small arms shipments from the Gulf. But the majority of weapons and money is coming from private donors in the Gulf. And that is what has emboldened some of the more radical elements of the FSA and foreign fighters, as opposed to the majority, which are pluralist fighters.
Aaron, I would love to get your perspective on this. Reading through the many articles, one on regime supporters, many of whom say this is not a civil war, it's being funded by outside agitators. How legitimate do you think that claim is after all of the work that you did on Syria?
Yeah, I don't, you know, that's complicated, obviously, because I feel like it was actually started by the Assad regime, and then this kind of Sunni support from the Gulf states started coming in. So, I mean, it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy if you look at it, where Assad is saying, oh, we have these terrorists, we have money coming in from the Gulf, we have, you know, the America or other states are coming in and kind of interfering and arming the rebels or helping them out with whatever kind of support they're offering that, you know, it isn't weapons support exactly yet. And so everything Assad has been saying about you know, this group is kind of it's coming true and kind of legitimizing his kind of side. You know, it's become a very polarized situation. And, you know, I think what started out as mostly a civil society movement of a Syrian patriotic movement against indignity, which was, you know, Assad's indignity against the young people of Syria, against, you know, just kind of his lingering, this kind of authoritarian flair, it kind of devolved into full-blown civil war. And it's I think that both sides have legitimate claims, but ultimately, you know, in doing the issue, we sided with the rebels. We sided with the people who don't want to be governed by this man who didn't even want to be president, and his father, who was president before him, who did the same thing. Who, whenever a group would kind of come forward, he would just crush them. I mean, just this kind of response to uprisings, this brutal response. Obviously, it breeds hatred and resentment among the Syrian people, and they're not going to let it go. They're not going to let him go.
There is actually an illustrated guide called The Road to Ruin, which pretty much goes back from, you know, 635 A.D. To the current day history of Syria in this issue. I believe we just lost Anna Teresa, and we'd love to get her back. But, you know, there's a big concern here among the fighters that she spoke with, for one thing, that they're going to have two revolutions in Syria, the first against Assad and the second against the jihadis. What has happened, at least in the reporting that she did and other reports that we've read or heard, that there are foreign jihadi fighters, the vacuum, the lack of they're so outgunned, I guess, by the Syrian regime that they are calling in foreign fighters, or many are volunteering. What do you think the prospective problem is down the road here? You have people fighting for a dream of a Sunni caliphate, or some for a pluralist
right.
Syria. What's going to happen here?
Well, I mean, that's partially the Western states. I mean, you could kind of pin it to them, where the Syrian people were really hoping. They were hoping for this kind of intervention that the West provided in Libya, and that didn't materialize. So I think what it comes down to, when you don't, you know, when the beacon of democracy, you know, doesn't show up and doesn't help out, you take what you can get. And, you know, these fighters, I don't think there's that many of them, actually, but I think they're coming up, and if they're good fighters, I mean, the war's been raging, and you need basically the best help you can get. And just from Anna Teresa's reports and our other correspondents, Robert King interviewing FSA fighters, mm-hmm. talking about the jihadis. I mean, kind of what I see is that they're considered this kind of green beret. I mean, the jihadis are not considered. They're feared and respected, but they're considered the guys that will stay out all night. They're considered the most the bravest fighters who aren't scared to go in and risk their lives, and that's admirable. That's what you want in a fighter. And so while there is, you know, of course the world is kind of watching and saying, what's going to happen with the jihadis? Is it going to become a theocracy? What's going to happen? Everyone's watching Syria, and that's the big issue. That's the issue that's keeping Assad in power, is that Assad has this claim. You know, it's fair to say that he's been a secular leader. You know, he's kind of been the great, he's kind of equalized all these different groups that have to coexist in Syria. And people want that stasis. People want that to continue. That's reasonable. There's been so much fighting in the Middle East and Lebanon. You know, Lebanon fell apart in the 70s and 80s due to, you know, the different groups fighting, killing each other. And whatever happens in Syria will, you know, spread over to Lebanon. So, I mean, you know, you take the evil that you know, and that's kind of the reason people want to support Assad. And you know he's, you know, new boss same as the old boss. All mm-hmm. these kind of adages you can kind of apply to the situation. And these are the fears that people have about a new situation emerging, is that it's going to be a lot worse than the old one.
Well, thank you so much. I think we have Anna Therese Day back. We've got just about 40 seconds left. Anna, any observations on what we just heard about who's fighting in Syria, the need for two revolutions, one against Assad and second against jihadis?
Yes, I had a very interesting final interview with a contact who's a fighter in Aleppo, and he said that the issue is time. He said right now the foreign fighters are here as guests. And they acknowledge that, and the Syrian opposition acknowledges that. They're very grateful for them, but the fighters are also grateful for their hospitality. What he said is the issue of time is because the longer that they stay, soon they'll start marrying people. Soon they speak the language. They understand the culture. They continue to have, exceptional victories as far as the FSA is concerned, securing air bases, securing major victories for the FSA. So there is a sense of urgency for most pluralist Syrians that there is some kind of decisive international intervention, because with more time, these people will only become more normalized and then perhaps have a stake in the new Syria that will emerge in post-conflict Syria.
Anna Therese Day, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Anna Therese visited us from Ramallah. She's a producer and journalist whose work has been featured in Vice Magazine, CNN International, BBC, and Al Jazeera English. You can read her recent article, Gun Running with the Free Syrian Army, in the November issue of Vice Magazine. We have a link to it online. And thanks so much to Aaron Lake Smith, senior editor at Vice Magazine, for being with us.
Thanks for having me.